Welcome to Postscript. My name is Dave, one of the pastors, and today with me is just Paul. Hey, Paul.
Wow. What an introduction.
I know. It's okay.
We've
really enjoyed having Chris with us. No, this is going to be great. You and I get to dig in, have some great conversations. So I'm excited for just Paul. We're starting a new series called Everywhere, and digging into kind of what this part of our strategy. We talk about embodying Jesus everywhere, and what does that look like? So you started us off on the series. Why don't you give us a little recap from Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, really, we were introducing the topic and looking kind of big picture, I think, and trying to create a bit of a framework for us, because I think when we talk about when we say embodying Jesus everywhere, what some people will hear is, I need to stand out as a Christian. I need to let my light shine. I need to be a good example. And all of those things are essentially, in a sense, true, I think. But the problem is our perception of what those things are, because I believe that for many of us, we see this idea of standing out as a Christian, and we think of ourselves as being morally better than other people. And we would never say that, because that sounds absolutely terrible.
Right.
But I think there's a sense in which we believe that as Christians, we should be happier, you know, more well-adjusted, and, you know, have better kids and all this kind of stuff, because we are following the way of Jesus. And I think that is the thing that I want us to kind of focus in on a little bit, in the sense that I want us to know what actually does differentiate us. And so we talked about this big sort of category of, what does it look like to be a priesthood? And what does that look like for us as we represent God to the people around us? And so we're going to look at the everywhere part of that, embodying Jesus everywhere, talk about our homes and our churches and our neighborhoods, and eventually we're going to talk about our world too.
Yeah, so we started with our homes, but I want to touch on this priesthood thing. We are not. We don't use the language of priests in the evangelical church often, right? I mean, priests, it is used in the Catholic Church, but we don't, and certainly used in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
The people who basically did the Lord's work, helped the work of God. I mean, kind of the pastors in some ways, right? The representatives. But I think part of the reason we don't use that word in our tradition is that we see these passages of scriptures, like the one we read about us as followers of Jesus being a priesthood. And we recognize, if you were a follower of Jesus, this applies to all of us, right?
Yeah.
This is not just you or me as professional church people. It's all of us.
Yeah. And we probably look at the Catholic Church as well, or, I mean, as evangelicals, the idea of a priesthood is something that we are, you know, historically have moved away from in terms of this idea of a mediator between us and God in the form of a priest. And so because of that, we tend to take passages like this and we don't really want to talk about them, or we at least kind of like, you know, brush them off as something that, you know, maybe less important for us. But I think, and, you know, we just come through Reformation Sunday and, you know, this anniversary of Martin Luther posting his thesis on the Wittenberg church door. And I think, though, that I could go way into this, because this was actually part of my master's thesis when I talked about some of the origins of Lutheran theology. But one of the things that he talked about was this idea of a priesthood of all believers. So let me get into this a little bit, because I think
it's great.
On the one hand, the priesthood of all believers, I think, okay, let's start with where Luther was coming from. I believe that Luther's main focus when he was talking about this idea of the priesthood of all believers is that we are all, no matter what our job is, on an equal playing field in terms of our relationship with God. We have one mediator, that's Jesus. And because we have Jesus, then all of us, whether we are a carpenter or a minister or you know, whatever we are, stay-at-home mom, whatever, all of those things are equal. And that's why this idea of the priesthood of all believers is a very equaling kind of thing. Through the years, and I think even in Martin Luther's time, what's very fascinating is Martin Luther didn't talk about the priesthood of all believers as much at the end of his life as he did when he was, you know, kind of in the beginning part. And so one of the reasons for that was there was this, you know, revolt of the, you know, of the classes, where there were fights that were happening and things, because people would take this idea of priesthood of all believers, and they would say that what that means is that all believers are priests, which means I have direct access to God and I speak for God.
Right.
And I have this one-on-one relationship. Mm-hmm. And so the analogy kind of breaks down in that sense, mm. because that's not what we're talking about. We still have a mediator and that's Jesus.
Yeah.
But the priesthood of all believers means that we begin to take on some of these responsibilities for each other. Mm-hmm. So for example, confession. Now we confess to each other, even offering forgiveness. We can offer forgiveness because of Jesus, not because of us, yeah. not because we have some authority, but Jesus does. Mm. So this idea of the priesthood of all believers has been a bit confused throughout history. And it is something that is, we have to look at carefully. But in this context, as we were talking today, in 1 Peter, he's saying, hey, I want you to live differently among mm-hmm. the people that you live alongside. And so with that in mind, he talks about this, you are a royal priesthood. And yeah. actually, I got to touch on this too. I'm nerding this out here. I'm really sorry. He actually says a royal priesthood. I didn't even mention this on Sunday. But a royal priesthood means when the people who heard this for the first time heard this idea of royal priesthood,
yeah.
what they would have recognized, nobody becomes royal because they've been, it's something that is bestowed on them. It's given to them by yeah. their birth or by, you know, whatever. So the point was when he says you are a royal priesthood, he says you are a priesthood, not by your own making, but by God. He mm. has made you into this. So you have become this, not through your merit or anything that you've done, mm. which again, puts us into proper perspective. I'm not a priest in the sense that I now have the power to do all of these things myself in a sort of a unique relationship. Mm. It's more about us being built into something. Right. So anyways, I'm sorry. Right. I went way down a rabbit trail there.
No, it's okay. And this idea, the word ambassador has been used elsewhere, emissary, which is also, it's what we see in Genesis, right? Right at the beginning of the story. So this is not, it's not new. And in many ways, the ideals of Western democracy are actually based loosely on yeah. this, right? Like this is where they came from. Like mm-hmm. Human rights, human equality, all of that actually it was largely born out of humanity's wrestle with this idea that yeah. is presented in the scripture, but we're not going to go down that road. So talk to me a little more. We talked this week about integrity
yes.
a little bit. So as we are this priesthood, as we figure out how to embody Jesus everywhere, we talked about integrity and we talked about starting in our homes.
Right. And I read a passage from Proverbs chapter 20 that says that the godly walk with integrity, blessed are their children who follow them. Mm. And I thought, as I read that, I was like, it's so interesting that when the Bible talks about integrity, our children are mentioned. And why yeah. is that? Because our children see us as we truly are. And so when we leave the house and sometimes for many of us, we may, have all kinds of different responsibilities. And at times we sort of have to put on those characteristics, mm-hmm. those responsibilities. If I am a, whatever it is, I got to, sort of present that in the way that I dress, the way that all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there's no pretending with this when it comes to our homes. And so mm-hmm. I think starting in our homes is very, very important.
Yeah. And probably really hard, yeah. for many of us, right? Like it's in some ways it's easier, And I say this both as a recognition of reality and probably a confession. It's easier to go out and to put on what looks like integrity for people who don't live with me than it is for me to have it with my wife and my kids.
Right.
Because they know me, right? And you pointed that out so beautifully. And sometimes even when we're out in public, we can be misidentified. Constable yep. Paul.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like you told that great story of someone pegging you as a cop and, right. It's easy to kind of fake some things, but in sure. our homes, and kind of as this foundation, this is where it starts. So my question around this is how do we know what practicing integrity looks like while also like holding in this tension of wanting to be better, wanting to better represent Jesus and not wanting to be fake. So not making it about legalism, not wanting to put things on like, the question I have is, so what do I do if I'm feeling angry at my kids? Mm-hmm. What does it look like to have integrity in that moment? Is it to be like, well, I'm angry at you. I'm going to tell you I'm angry at you. Or is it to like hold my tongue and to practice that wisdom and like try to become more like that? How the tension between who we are and who we want to be. It's kind of what I'm getting at.
Yeah. And I guess, I don't know. I mean, I'm not an expert on that happen, you know, in some ways, but I would say that it's in a sense, it's both. I think there are times where we need to, you know, try to, you know, recognize the, you know, the signs as we're getting angry and, you know, in a sense where it's not appropriate for whatever reason. And, you know, we should be taking steps to try to, you know, quell that or to, you know, take control of our words or be yeah. careful about the things that we say and all of those kinds of things. I also would say, though, that probably most important when it comes to integrity is to model the gospel, the good news of the gospel in all of our interactions. So what that means is that if I do something that is across the line as a parent, if I say something or whatever, you know, I have this opportunity to acknowledge, not try to hide it and pretend that it didn't happen or pretend that it was fine or rationalize or whatever, but to actually own it, to say, you know what, I was wrong, and ask for forgiveness. And I think that in that we actually paint a picture of the gospel. You know, if God can forgive me of my sins, then you know, I should be able to offer forgiveness and also receive forgiveness from my kids or from my wife. Mm.
Yeah, and you talked on Sunday about people who are look Christian, people who are more Christian than my Christian friends, right? Which is this interesting idea of what is it to be Christian? And yeah. I wonder about this this practice of confession, basically,
yeah.
as actually being a really good mark of a Christian. And not that we know people who confess elsewhere, of course, but there seems to be like yeah. one of the invitations of Jesus is not only to be holy, which it is, to be right, living right and living the life of love, but also to admit when we're wrong and to confess that to one another and to be able to move on. And I wonder if that's one of these markers of integrity in our homes that, certainly as you see it, say it, it's something I'm like, yep, that's one I want to grow in.
Yeah, for sure. I think the worst thing that we can do for our family and when I say in our homes, you know, often for you and I, we immediately think about our families
right.
and not everybody has kids growing up in their home. Yeah. Not everyone is living with other people in their home.
Right.
And so I want you, if that is you, to be able to kind of think of this in a more generalized way. But I would say that the worst thing that we can do for the people who are closest to us, including our children, is to pretend that that being a Christian means that I never have a bad day, or that, you know, because of Jesus and because, you know, I am going to be rich and famous, or because, like, when we start presenting false gospels to our kids, that's very confusing.
Yeah.
You know, in the sense right. of like, you know, like this, here's what's going to happen. Right. So,
yeah.
So I would definitely say that, you know, all of those things, you know, really, really focusing in on, okay, what is the big picture here in terms of the gospel? What has God done for us? And then how can I represent that to my kids, both in my successes and in my failures?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is definitely challenging.
Yeah. And it's different, right? I mean, cause we, you know, we tend to, especially in parenting, we want to make sure that there's a good divide, that there's, you know, authority, that we, you know, we're the ones that call the shots and all those kind of things.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, listen, the Bible talks about, you know, mutual submission in our homes, including, you know, not sort of being that kind of authority figure in the one sense over our kids. Yes, we are in authority over them, but that doesn't mean that we, you know, that we're going to treat them poorly or aggravate them or, you know, push their buttons or, you know, whatever. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, it sounds like an obvious thing when you don't have kids. And when you do have kids, you're like, oh yeah, no, I do that. I do that yeah. more often than I might like to admit.
So, yeah, I do too. I listen, there's so many times where I recognize that. And, you know, even when our kids have got caught in something that has nothing to do with us, you know, I could call back the truth of the gospel and say, look, like, I'm going to forgive you. Use those kind of words, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to show you grace. But let's talk this through. Right?
Right.
And those are the kind of conversations that I think are much more meaningful and actually can help us embody Jesus in those contexts. Mm-hmm.
I want to go back to what you said. I mean, we are talking mostly right now about homes, and we're talking about homes like ours with kids and spouses, lots of people who don't have that, who live on their own or, you know, empty nesters or there's all kinds of other things, live in communal housings in some kind of way. How are we defining home here? Are we kind of letting people define it as they will, kind of this first circle of relationships in our life?
Yeah, I think what I was trying to get at is, like, who are you with the people and in the places where you feel most comfortable?
Right.
So the relationships and the spaces where you are most yourself. Hmm. And I don't know. I mean, you know, we could talk all day about, you know, who are we really, right?
Right.
But I imagine that, you know, when you are sitting on the couch, you know, kind of relaxing at the end of the day, you're not interested in making anybody see you a certain way. You're just right. Being who you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, kind of when we're most, when we're most ourselves and when we're most, vulnerable and our guard is down and,
right.
and that, yeah.
And sometimes that could be in really close relationships, yep. But the point is not to find those relationships. The point is that when we think about embodying Jesus, it must start with, you know, our integrity about who we really are. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of had this framework that I talked about, yeah. You know, the big picture was, and I want to sort of, continue this framework as we go and look in all of the different areas. But I really, you know, just kind of said, okay, what was the responsibility of the priesthood? Mm. And I said that they represented God to people. They yep. represented people to God. That's the second thing. And that they were the mediators of God's blessings. In other words, they took what they got from God and they passed it on to the people,
yeah.
right? So to me, I think that's a helpful sort of framework as I think about, you know, integrity and just sort of living this out in those, you know, most like the, you know, at my foundation, you know, who I truly am. Mm-hmm. What does it look like for me to represent God to the people around me, the people that I care most about? And then how do I represent those people back to God? And then how do I take what God's given us and pass it on to them? So those are the kind of the spaces.
Yeah. So are there any, like within that, are there any practical tips, any things we could be trying, as we want to grow in those things? What does that look like? I mean, I know like this is part of the beauty of incarnation is that we've all got our own like circles and ways of doing right. things and personalities, but are there any broad things that we can say, try this.
Yeah. So let me give you an example of the first section was how do I represent God to the people closest to me? I would say that there are two main categories. There is a part of us that are reflecting the characteristics of God. And then the second thing is about talking about what God has been up to, reminding people and telling stories, right?
Right.
So on the one hand, I would say that it would be really helpful to think about how you can invite Jesus into your everyday conversations, whether it's around the dinner table, whether it's before you go on a road trip or whatever it is, how do you kind of bring Christ into those conversations? That's one thing. The other side of it in terms of characteristics, you know, I think what would be really helpful and is to think about the characteristics that you could even go to Colossians chapter 3 and that talks about some of the things that we put on, right? Because we are set apart, you know, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humbleness, right?
Yep.
And so I would take one of those characteristics and maybe what you could do for a week is just write it down, you know, and remind yourself of it over and over and over and over again. Mm. So for example, this week I'm going to work on patience.
Yeah.
You know, over anything else, that's what I'm going to focus on. And so you just spend all your time thinking about, okay, how can I be more patient in this situation? How can I, don't try to take it all on, just take one characteristic at a time. And then once you've mastered patience, once you've finished that week
later,
you could look on to humility or something like that. But I would just say pick one at a time and just think very carefully about how those things present themselves in your context. And this is what I would say this is not just about being morally good. These are characteristics that come along no matter what our circumstances are.
Right.
You can be patient in really hard stuff
and
be patient in the really good times too.
Yeah.
So, those are the characteristics that I would focus on and I would do them one by one.
Okay.
Like that's an example.
Yeah. I was thinking about that. So the last responsibility of a priest is to mediate God's blessing to others. Which got me thinking about Romans 15:13, because I wrote a song about it once. This is probably the best way I memorize scripture, but may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace as you trust in him so that you may overflow with hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. And just this reminder that like, even as I think about mediating blessings, like my initial reaction is like, well, that means physical things, right? Mm-hmm. Or like blessing. And I think we're called to generosity. We're called to hospitality. That's super important. But what does it look like for us to be mediators of hope, mm-hmm. to overflow with so much hope because of God that, mm-hmm. that we can give it out to the people around us on mm-hmm. God's behalf. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, it's a bit abstract, but that's on the great. Other hand, right? Really like good. It invites us into this, like, I think of my kids when my kids fail or my kids are having a hard day. How do I be a mediator of hope mm-hmm. in that circumstance? So, mm-hmm. So many good things there. We are out of time. Any closing thoughts for us or any direction as we're going into next week and the rest of the series?
Yeah. You know, I would just say, actually, I'll tell you the story and maybe I hope this doesn't go too far, you know, take us in a different direction. But I would say that one of the stories that I've been thinking about is from Acts chapter 1 and 2, when Jesus ascends into heaven and he basically tells his disciples, hey, you are going to be my witnesses. You are going to be the people that people, yeah. you're going to let people know. But the neat thing is he says right at the very beginning, he says, don't go anywhere. Don't do anything. Don't touch anything until the Holy Spirit comes.
Right.
And I think that's a really good reminder to us that my responsibility is not just to be a better person. My responsibility is to respond wholeheartedly to the work of the Spirit in my life.
That's so good. Well, on that note, we are going to wrap up our Postscript episode for this week. We will be back next week with more as we continue on this series called Everything. As always, if you've got any questions or comments, feel free to get in touch. We would love to have a conversation with you. Talk to you next week here on Postscript.